Hey, it's Dolla White, and this is the Dolla White Podcast. My guest today is author and copywriter Gabriella Lindsay. Now, recently, one of my Facebook friends shared an article that Gabriella wrote for CNBC in which she shared her family story of leaving the United States for the beach life. Now, when I read the article, I knew I had to have Gabriella on because I kind of want to live vicariously through her. Let's get the podcast started. Real quick note before we do that, if my wife happens to be listening, I promise this is not like a 30-minute long infomercial on why we should move to Ecuador. But if it happens to make you think about it, we can definitely talk. You know where to find me. We live together. Let's move to Ecuador. Welcome to the Dolla White Podcast.
Pulo Gini. Live.
Yeah, what's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here.
A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat-out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolla White Podcast.
Episode 16 out of the Dolla White Podcast. My guest today, Gabriella Lindsay. Thank you for being here. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited.
So I read a story that you did for CNBC, and my wife and I have always talked about possibly getting up and leaving the United States one day, and you actually did it. And I'm like, this is dope. I gotta talk to her. So the first thing that really stuck out in the article was you said we found ourselves increasingly frustrated at the amount of energy it took to simply get by. I feel like I know what that means, but I want to hear you kind of elaborate on that a little bit.
I don't want to sound negative, but we kind of bought into the American hype of like, you have the two cars, you have the forever home that you've got the backyard and the white picket fence and the whole nine. And we just kept acquiring stuff and keeping up with the Joneses and trying to make sure that, you know, our kids had every, you know, obviously kids first, wanting them to have everything, wanting them to feel included, not wanting them to feel like they don't have. And we were just struggling. We were working full-time jobs. We were working side hustles. We were commuting 90 minutes each way to get to work and back from work. The kids were in daycare and school all day long. We weren't seeing them. And it was just getting overwhelming. It was, the struggle was getting harder than it was kind of worth. But we weren't really sure how to like actually get out of it's a cycle, you know?
Yeah, it really is. Every Saturday morning, my wife, my daughter, and I, we go and we get donuts. And when we get back to the house, you kind of feel this high. It's like, this was a really good family outing. And all we did was just go get donuts. But it's a Saturday morning. There's no work. There's no emails. There's no stress. There's no phone, nothing. And you think to yourself, wow, this could be like every day. When I read that in the article and then I experienced the last Saturday donut date that I had my wife and my daughter, I was like, this is why people get the hell out of here, because we live to work in America where others seem to work to live, and the living comes first in other cultures. And I think I experienced that first. I went to Hawaii, I think in 07, and that was like the first time I had left the continental United States. And I know Hawaii is technically the US, but it's different, man. It's a whole different culture. They place value on different thing. So talk about that for a minute, because I know you guys moved to Mexico originally, and now you're, where are you now?
We're on the island of Antigua in the Caribbean West Indies.
Yes. So both beautiful places that probably move a little bit slower than we do here, right?
So much slower. And you're right about Hawaii. We actually got to take a quick trip to Maui, just my husband and I. We were living in Mexico at the time. We were visiting family in the States, got to go to Hawaii for a week. We left the kids with my in-laws. And we said, like, we want to move to an island. And 12 months later, here we were, because Hawaii is not like the US.
You
know, it is. I mean, it is, but it isn't. And yeah, Mexico and Antigua have a very different pace of life. Very much emphasis on family first, very much emphasis on the work-life balance. Now, I'll preface that by saying we're coming from a very privileged end of it, right? Like, there are definitely people who are in the struggle still. You know, there's certain things that are the same. You need house, you need shelter, you need transportation, you need food. So there is that as well. But some of the things we've noticed that are just very different is, if my children have a doctor's appointment, my husband can send his boss an email and say, hey, I need to step out for an hour to go take my kid to the doctor's office. Is that fine? And it's fine. You know, whereas back in the States, it was like there was paperwork and there were things you had to clock in and clock out, and they had to find a sub and they had to do this. And here it's like, we get that you have a family. We get that you want to bring your family to things, or your kids are sick. You have to stay home and work from home today. You know, as long as you get what needs to get done, we're fine. And if you're a few minutes late, we're not going to holler at you. It's fine. You know, and the pace has slowed down, and we have a lot more Saturday morning donuts days. You know what I mean? Like, we have a lot more of that now than we did when we were in the States. And that's kind of what we were looking for.
I know you're originally from Chicago, correct? My wife is from the Chicago area. I grew up in Atlanta. We live in Nashville, Tennessee now. And I've never lived near a beach before. My wife lived in Miami for a few years, so she kind of knows the feeling. I've never lived near a beach. I want to live near a beach one day. I'm dying to live near a beach one day. But can you kind of describe that? Because I feel like most people in the United States that we just don't live near beaches. And I think it's a totally different vibe when you do, right?
It is. My husband, I will say, takes much more advantage of it than I do. He's an early bird. He's up around 3:45, 4 o'clock every single morning. And one of the things he does most mornings is the beach is actually just a block up here. And so he goes and he sits and he meditates and he just breathes and he takes his journal out there. He reads, he plays musical instruments. So he brings that up there sometimes. But it's definitely different. We can just go to the beach for like 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour. It's not like a trip, you know, like when we're in the States, it was like, Oh, we're going to the beach. And it's like this whole production. You got to pack the bags and the lunches and get in the car. And, you know, you inevitably forget something and then it rains and it's all over and it's ruined. Whereas here it's like, oh, let's, you know, run up to the beach for a few minutes. And if it rains, no big deal. We'll go home. We'll come back tomorrow. And it's really peaceful. Like for me personally, on like a spiritual level, like I feel like I'm at peace when I'm near the water. And so being both in Mexico, we were by the Pacific Ocean, now we're at the Caribbean Sea. It's just been really like, healing. It's very healing.
Where you were in Mexico, I know Mexico gets a ton of travelers now from the U.S. Were you in a high tourist area? And if you were, like, how did that kind of affect the day-to-day peace, I guess?
Yeah, actually, the town we lived in was a cruise ship port. So we had high season and low season. So, you know, during the winter months, all the cruise ships would be coming, you know, people trying to get away from the cold in the States. And then we had a lot of what they call snowbirds, which was like, is older people who, you know, retire. Yeah. They come down in the winter. So it was a very different vibe in like the winter months from the summer months. But even still where we were, it wasn't like Cancun, you know, like you definitely felt like you were in Mexico. You had to speak Spanish to get around to most things. If you needed services, you needed to go to the grocery, you needed to be able to at least kind of communicate certain things in Spanish, get in a taxi, speak Spanish. So that was really nice. It was a nice balance of kind of being in a built up city with some tourist attractions, museums, activities for the kids, but then also really being able to immerse ourselves in the culture. But yeah, it was a 180 between like October, November through, you know, April, May. And then from May till, you know, it was like, oh, now we in it.
Right. How did your kids adapt? I know you had, I think you said they were what, 3, 4, and 5 at the time you guys moved. Our daughter is 3. Like, how did they do?
They did surprisingly well. Like, they were my biggest concern. I was really concerned, especially with language, because when we first got there, I was going to homeschool because I was just sure they won't pick up Spanish. They can't go to school. I'm going to have to homeschool them. And a friend of ours had a daughter who was my daughter, she's the oldest. She was 5 at the time. They were the same age. She went with her to school for a day. And my daughter came back like, I want to go back tomorrow. And they had school as little as 3. They took them as little as 3. So the next day I sent all of them. And not too long, they were fluent in Spanish, like for their ages. My 3-year-old stopped talking. That was a little scary. I will say that. My 3-year-old literally stopped talking. He would understand and he would respond. Like we would say, go do a thing. And he'd go do it. But he wasn't talking to us in Spanish. He wasn't talking to us in English. He just was not talking. And then one day, it's just this perfectly beautiful, fluent Spanish was coming out of his mouth. And he was saying it to me. And I'm looking at him like, I don't know what you're saying. But then he figured, you know, in a couple of weeks of that. And then he was doing both. It was like he would flip between English, Spanish, English, Spanish. Little words he didn't know. He's asking me for something that he learned in school. And I didn't know what it was. I'm looking it up, you know. But they really transitioned surprisingly well. And they've maintained a lot of their Spanish. And I mean, they just picked it up like...
I've heard that it's easier for kids to pick up a second language than it is for adults. And I guess I can believe that because they're still developing and their minds are still developing. So it might be, you know, a better time for them to wrap their minds around that. Something else in your article, you said, if we wanted to experience happiness, we had to take action. Whose idea was it for you guys to leave? And did it take some convincing?
It really didn't. So we were married in Mexico and it had been on our hearts literally for 7 years at that point. We kind of like said, oh, every time we would visit my parents, oh, we should move here. We should move here. We should move. And you get into the thing, right? And we just kind of kept pushing it off. And then when my mom passed away, we were there for 2 weeks taking care of final arrangements, things like that. And the more we sat there, we're like, you know, we can't keep putting things off. During those few months between that time and when we actually moved, we definitely like flip-flopped. You know, I was like, oh, this is a horrible idea. What were probably thinking this is not. And he's like, no, we can do this. And then he would be like, oh, I don't know. How are we going to, you know, as a man, you know, how are we going to, I got to make sure we have the bills and the things. And I'm like, no, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. So we kind of went through this back and forth, but we were both on board from the jump. And so that helped a lot. But even still, like, we had our moments where we had to kind of convince ourselves that, you know, we both really believe that, you know, if something's on your heart for a long time, God, the universe, whomever you believe it, that it's being placed on your heart for a reason. And you have to do what you can to go, or at least try to go with that thing if you can.
When you guys got there, like the first couple weeks, the first month, whatever, was it like stressful or was it just like an immediate kind of like, hey, we're here, we can exhale, it's beautiful, or kind of a mixture of both?
It was a mixture of both. I remember we landed and we had already rented a home. It was pretty much empty, but we had a home. And so we like got off the plane, got to the house, dropped our stuff off, and we walked to the beach. It was like the first thing we did. We didn't shower. We didn't do nothing. We just walked to the beach. And we got to the beach and I remember looking out and saying like, this is crazy. Like, we're not going home, you know, because normally, you know, you go on vacation, you're like, how many days do I have to enjoy this view? You're kind of like, oh, it's only going to be 4 more days. You know, I remember distinctly, we're like, oh, you know, this is it. We're here. And then, you know, 2 days later, it's like, we don't have running water. Oh my gosh. Okay. We don't have any electricity. Oh, we have no internet. I have to work. What are we going to do? How do we do this? And in different countries, you know, and heck, setting up utilities in the States is hard, but in, you know, Mexico, having to navigate the language, you have to physically go to the office. You have to provide 20,000 documents because you're not from there. And they're trying to figure out, are you going to run on the bill? Like, how do we follow up with you? You know, are you legit? So we definitely had a good warming up period while we were there. And then Antigua was a whole nother thing. We came here sight unseen. I had no idea what this place was like. You had to drive on the other side of the road. So I had to learn how to drive British style, which I'm still, you know, I almost left my husband for a quick minute once we moved here. I'm like, you can stay. I am going home. I'm going to live in your parents' bedroom. I cannot take this. I take the kids. You have fun. I'll see you later. I love you, but I got to go. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely
an adjustment period.
Definitely an adjustment period. And even though we'd been abroad before, this was a different one for me, but I love it now. I wouldn't change it for the world. It's just like anywhere. You move to a new city, a new town, a new house, and there's always those quirks you got to kind of deal with, and you do.
How are things like internet? My wife and I got married in Cortona, Italy, which is in Tuscany, and then we did our honeymoon like all over Italy, and we were on the Amalfi Coast, and there's a sign in the hotel that we were staying at. It basically said, sometimes the internet works, sometimes it doesn't. Take it easy. You're on vacation. Yeah. If it's not working right now, it'll work again. Basically, don't bother us if the internet isn't working. So are utilities and things like that iffy sometimes? And if when they are, is it easy to get them fixed? Do people come right out? Or is it kind of like, yeah, we'll get there when we get there?
Yeah, it's kind of we'll get there when we get there. The town we were in Mexico, the city we were in, wasn't quite so bad. It was like almost 500,000 people. Right. So, I mean, it was like a big city. Here, the entire island is about 90,000. Wow. So it's a whole country, right? So here, the power cuts on and off. We're on like power grids. So yeah. Like they're trying to conserve the power. So we have some scheduled outages. And then we have some where they're just like, and turn it off. The internet, the same thing. But because of our businesses, and thankfully, you know, we've been able to invest in purchasing higher grade internet plans. And then the house we're in now, we have a generator. So in the event that the power does cut out, we can, you know, turn on the generator so that we can maintain power. But it's definitely not like the United States. Like, you really only lose power when there's major weather or major event here. Right. It's just like, oh, it's Tuesday. Yeah. It's 2 o'clock. So yeah.
It can be iffy sometimes. And in the town you're in Mexico, I know we went to Tulum, I think, in 2016. And when we were also in Sicily, they both had very sensitive plumbing and you couldn't flush toilet paper. Could you flush toilet paper in either place or both places? Or
where we were in Mazatlan, it depended on where you were. So the house that we rented, we were advised not to flush toilet paper. So we didn't. That was fun. that was really fun when we would visit my in-laws in LA and my kids didn't, like, we had drilled in a don't flush the paper. And so of course they get to LA and my mother-in-law's like, ah, you know, because
it's in the trash can. Yeah.
So in Mexico, yeah, where we were in Mazatlan, like if you were in a more upscale restaurant or in some of the hotels, they had more upgraded. If they were like newer constructions, they had more upgraded plumbing so you could flush. But our house was kind of older, so we didn't. Here, we do. Everything's pretty normal.
Of everything in the United States that you guys left behind, what would you say the one thing that you miss the most is, besides family?
I know this sounds silly, but like food. I mean, there's just such a wide array of different types of food there. You know, in terms of like different ethnic, you know, you can have Ethiopian food, you know, have Chinese, like, you know, just like the different types. And then one smaller thing, being that we are on an island, we did not experience this as much in Mexico as we do here. Being on an island, obviously shopping is limited, and there are certain things like you can't just like go to a store, like we don't have a Target. And so if you want a certain thing, like there's one brand and that's just the brand that you get. It doesn't matter. Like you want headphones, you get this one brand. We have a Radio Shack. You go to Radio Shack and you buy the Radio Shack headphones because that's what they got. And we have to order stuff through Amazon and it comes on a container. So you have to like prepare a month in advance for whatever it is that you want because it takes about a month to get here. So little stuff like that. Sometimes the ease of convenience. But given that we're kind of living a little bit more minimally than we were in the States is actually kind of a blessing in disguise, because again, how many times do you go into a Target for one thing and end up with a shopping cart pricing out at $200, you know? So it's a little give and take. I mean, to trade it for having a beachfront and having, I mean, we have 365 beaches here. It's beautiful every single day. I can give up a little bit of shopping. It's cool.
Like, yeah. I get it. I know one thing for me anyway, if my wife and I were to ever to leave, a hurdle would be just visitation. Like, okay, we made enough money to buy a place overseas or whatever, but how often are we going to be able to come back and see our people? I think living in Mexico, probably not that hard to get a ticket out, not too terribly expensive, but other places it can get expensive. If you, you know, move to Europe, that could get expensive. Have you guys ran into any issues with traveling back if you needed to catch a flight day of or 2 days beforehand? Has that been an issue?
Thankfully, we haven't had to do that, but that's definitely something we keep in mind, especially here on island with hurricane season, is like having an emergency fund. You need that for that type of thing exactly, because again, like the prices skyrocket. There's five of us. Even now we were looking, they're talking about maybe doing a family reunion in 2021. We're not really ready to travel yet, but we'll see. You know, even that just like a piece, it's like about $800 and that's cheap. Yeah. Like it's $800 a piece to get back to the States right now. And then, you know, during hurricane season, if there's a price gap, you know, the airlines do what they do sometimes. So yeah, that's definitely a consideration. Like if you are thinking of moving abroad, something to consider is having an emergency fund, but then also having plane fare liquid and accessible for you to book a plane ticket if you need to in a day or two. And the further you get away from the States, the more expensive. You know, you're right. Mexico was not a big deal to get to LA. It was right. One flight. Right. But now it's, you know, multiple flights to get to LA with layovers and extra costs. So
I know you and your husband, I believe, work for yourselves. Your husband's a professor now, but I mean, you guys were kind of working for yourselves when you were in Mexico. Did you know other expats that kind of found cool jobs in Mexico or where you're at now? Is it easy for an expat to find a job in another country? Or is that something that's tough?
It varies. So it's typically difficult to find a job once you're in the country. For you usually can't just like walk up to a restaurant and say, hey, can I get a job? Or walk into a store, or walk into a business and see a job posting and apply for it. Typically, countries tend to want to give their jobs to their people. Right. And in Mexico and here in Antigua, there's a requirement that a certain percentage of the staff must be like nationals of Mexico or nationals of Antigua. And then they can only really hire out if it's a job that cannot be fulfilled by somebody in that specific country, because you have a very unique skill set. Can you find a job abroad? Definitely. Can you find a job that will sponsor you to go? Absolutely. We know lots of expats who that's how they became expats. They got a job in the UAE. They got a job in Mexico. They got a job here in Antigua. A lot of the professors at his university are from the States and other parts of the world because of that. But going to a country and then kind of hoping that a job will open up is not something I would necessarily advise doing, because they are looking to hire from like within, which I think is really cool. Like, I think that's great.
If somebody's listening to this, thinking about it, they should figure that out beforehand, right? Like have that job locked down, figure that out beforehand. Something else you said in your article, living abroad gives you a different perspective, one that encourages growth, compassion, self-awareness, and a deeper understanding of other cultures. We left America to discover something new, and in return, we found happiness. How long do you think it took to really gain an appreciation for the things you said in the quote that I just read back to you?
I think quick in a way, because we were ready for it. Like this was something we wanted and we were looking for that change. But I can pinpoint a specific moment when my kids had been in school. They started school in November. We went for a parent, kind of like an open house, just to kind of see what they do in their classrooms. And I believe that was sometime in maybe like April. So just a few months later. And when I sat down in the classroom and my kids were standing up in front of all their peers, in front of all of these stranger parents, and were just reciting and talking in Spanish. It was just kind of like, wow, like this is like an experience I've never had as a child, I didn't get as a child. And I was just really excited about that. And I think having kids has been good for us because we've been immersed into the culture a little bit more because of them, because they want to have play dates and their friends want to invite them over. And we go right. over to friends' houses and they're people who are from where we're visiting, you know, very different than what you get when you're just traveling. So that cultural immersion happened kind of quickly for us, but we were looking for that. I know plenty of expats who move abroad and expect it to be just like the States, and they get upset when things yeah. aren't like that and they have to wait in line or they can't. And it's a frustration. I mean, yes, but also take a deep breath and appreciate what's around you and enjoy it, because it will make the ride so much smoother if you do.
Was it hard for you to change your mindset from living to work to working to live? Did that take some time? Did you have to like calm yourself down a little bit? Because it's just not the way we grow up here, right? I mean, the first thing you ask when you describe somebody is you say, what do they do for a living? We are all kind of in that prison of what you do for a living, whatever that is, gives you some kind of value and some kind of purpose. And that's not necessarily the case, or not the case. It shouldn't be the case anyway, right? A person's value shouldn't be attached to what it is their job is. But that's how we think here. And it's hard not to think that way. I'm guilty of it myself. I tried to get myself out of that mind frame while still living here. But was that a hard change for you to make?
Oh, it definitely was. Mainly because at first, when we first moved to Mexico, you know, we had some money saved. You know, we sold our cars, we sold our house, we sold our stuff. So we had like some money saved. You know, you get, especially, and as an entrepreneur, like you get in that hustle culture. Like now it's not even just like going to work. It's like now you hustle, you work 24/7, like sleep when I'm dead, kind of, you know. So we kind of got into that a little bit because we were like, oh my gosh, you know, we have to make this work. We don't want to, you know, have to be, you know, dragging ourselves back. My in-laws house, like, we made a mistake, take us in, please, we're sorry. We didn't want to do that. And so we really kind of like hit the ground running while we were in Mexico. And at some point we both kind of were like, you know, like, hey, like we weren't doing the things we wanted to do. Like we had moved there to spend time with our kids. We'd moved there to go to the beach. We'd moved there to, you know, go see live open air, you know, free music. And we were not doing that. And kind of like you said, with the donuts on the weekends, like we would do that. I'm like, what are we doing? Like, we totally are missing the point of everything, right? And we, you know, kind of had to sit down and really like do another reassessment. We do reassessments all the time, but had to do like another little reassessment and say, okay, like, let's block our schedule. Let's, you know, not fall into that hustle and grind kind of thing and let things kind of just flow naturally. And you don't have to respond to that email at midnight. You'll be okay. They'll be fine. Do it in the morning, you know? And even when we moved here to Antigua a little bit, because he got back into the workplace.
Yeah.
He, my husband, kind of got back into that. You know, I have to be there by, like, nobody's clocking you in. I got to be there, but I got to be there. And COVID has definitely kind of changed some things for us again, now that he's working from home a bit more. And again, another reassessment of, you know, what are our priorities?
It's done that for me too with COVID. And I work a little bit in the morning, take a little break, you know, come into the office for a little while, work a little bit, take a little break. Maybe I'll log in at night too. And I found I like working this way. I can't imagine having to go back to, you know, 8-9 hours straight. Like, I feel like this is really going to kick my ass whenever that happens, if that happens. I think we found something throughout the pandemic that maybe we place our values in places where they don't really need to be. I've really appreciated being at home a lot more and being able to spend a lot more time with my daughter than I ever did before COVID. You know, the last year, I probably spent more time with my daughter over the last year than I did, you know, combined the first 2 years of her life, right? And it's because I was at work all day. So I'd see her in the morning, I'd see her at night, and that was it. Whereas now it's see her all the time. Yeah. You know, there's something to be said for that.
It's been life-changing, I think, for a lot of us, good and bad. I mean, there's definitely good to come out of it too.
In the United States, we're kind of all indoctrinated into this is the best country on earth. I think that's such a moving target and such a relative term. Like, maybe it is the best country on earth for some people, but for others, maybe it's not. And maybe the best country on earth for them is Mexico or Ecuador or Italy or Spain or wherever. And so I think getting out of that mind state for a lot of people is tough to begin with, right? I think a lot of people, you have to convince them that, hey, you might like it better over here. You never know.
Oh yeah. When we first moved, I mean, people were like, y'all are crazy. Like, this is nuts. Haven't you heard? That's where the cartels are. This is what's going to happen. Haven't you? You can't drink the water. You're going to, you know, this, like, I'm sorry, I'm confused. Like, what, you know, I mean, like, how is being in Long Beach safer? How is being, you know, on the south side of Chicago? You know, we're from the south side. My husband's from the south side of Chicago. Like, how is this safer than, you know what I mean? Like, there's danger everywhere. There's good things everywhere. There's bad things everywhere. It's kind of what you look at and what you value. Like you said, like, if you're looking for the most busiest country in the world. Yeah, America's the best. You know, they're the busiest. They grind the hardest. Who knows? You know, yeah. But if you're looking for, you know, where can families go and really live life and be, you know, you go to a restaurant and bring your noisy kids and nobody minds, you know what I mean? Go to Mexico, you know? So it, like you said, it is about what your priorities are and what you're specifically looking for and finding that thing.
One thing I really thought was cool about when we visit other countries is we'll be walking around at night at like 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, and people all have their kids out and their kids are all playing that late. And like, you don't see little kids out in America playing at 9, 10. Our kids are in bed because we train them to get up in the morning and to go to work and or go to school, and school is the number one. But kids overseas, it seems like they're just all out and about at all times of the night. And that is what it is, right?
It is. It really, really is. That was the case in Mexico. We're on a curfew right now because of COVID, but that's kind of the case here, you know, as well. That, I mean, here, my kids, we feel safe, like letting our kids go out by themselves. Like they can like go places by them. You want to go to the park? Okay, go ahead. We'll watch you from the window. Like, I wouldn't do that kind of stuff in the city. Like, I wouldn't let them do certain things back in the States do let them do here, because it feels safer.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for doing this. Is there anything people should know about moving abroad, moving overseas, besides, you know, if you're thinking about it, just do it?
Yeah. That's exactly it. I mean, just do it. I mean, like, I definitely recommend doing your due diligence. I mean, there is definitely research in the process. You know, just because you visited a place doesn't mean you're ready to move there. A lot of people travel and go to a resort, or they stay at a hotel and they go to the restaurant that the concierge recommends, or they go to the, you know, the nightclub that was recommended by the driver. Like, if you're going to actually move abroad, you do need to take what I like to call a reconnaissance trip and actually experience the country or experience the town you're going to live in like a local. And then, like, once you do, like, really just be open to the experience. Because again, like, the more resistance, the more of your kind of Americanness that you bring with you, the more difficult the transition's going to be. And you don't have to move abroad forever. That's been a big one. Like, oh, I don't know if I can commit to living abroad for the rest of my life. I'm like, you don't. Like, you can go for 3 months and say you lived abroad. If you live like a local, you buy groceries, you turn on electricity, you live in a house that you got a key to for 2-3 months, you've lived abroad. Like, experience that. Don't let having to do it forever make you feel like you can't even experience it for a little. You don't have to renounce your citizenship. You know what I mean? Like, you can just go and be in peace and work and live and play in a different place for some time and enjoy it.
There you go. Thank you so much for doing this, Gabriella. Yeah, Lindsay, where can we find you on Instagram, Twitter, all of that?
So I'm on Instagram mostly at the Slay at Home Mom. It's underscores between each word. But that's where I am mostly. I share my life and my stories a lot. So
yeah. And her article on CNBC is a really dope read. I enjoyed every minute of it. So thank you so much for doing this. And, you know, hopefully one day wife and I and the baby will experience another culture, you know, for a long period of time rather than just a vacation.
It's totally worth it. Yeah. Definitely recommend.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Obviously, all of us have an idea of what our dream homes look like and even where our dream homes are located. And if it's your dream to live here in the tropical, lush, beachfront state of Tennessee, my good friend William Wilson of the Hammonds Group can help you out and owning that Tennessee dream home right on the gorgeous Mediterranean Sea. It's like every day would be a vacation on your beachfront property right here in the state of Tennessee. Seriously, though, if you're looking for a home to buy here in the state of Tennessee, call my guy, my good friend, my actual friend, William Wilson, 615-216-4809, 615-216-4809. I want to say thank you to my guest, Gabriella Lindsay, and again, reassure my wife that I wasn't using subliminal messaging this entire episode. Ecuador. Back next week with a brand new episode. My guest will be NFL great, Super Bowl champion, and subject of the film The Blind Side, Michael Orr. Make sure whatever platform you're currently listening on that you subscribe, follow, and set to auto-download. Leave me a rating if it's possible, and follow me Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Clubhouse, all of them, at DoleWite101, DoleWite101. Thank you again for checking out the podcast. Back next week. I'm out.